Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, our weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. When I was growing up, it was cool to smoke, and it was especially cool at the gay and lesbian bars I spent my weekends dancing in. When I started comedy in the 80s, you could smoke in bars and clubs and just about everywhere, and people smoked a lot. But smoking just isn't cool anymore, and for good reason. It's proven to cause cancer and heart disease. So here in California, we outlawed it in 95 in workplaces, and in 98, the ban included bars and restaurants. And the march to ban it seems to continue. Rental apartments, public spaces, parks. But for those people who smoke, it's more than a drag. You're a social pariah, even when you take it outside. My guest has been a community organizer for a variety of social change organizations over the years. Currently, he is the project director for Freedom from Tobacco, a project of the San Francisco LGBT Community Center on Market Street. Brian Davis, welcome back to Out in the Bay.
Thank you.
It's great to see you again. Also yes. Joining us is Rachel Nolan, also from Freedom from Tobacco. We invited some Castro District bar owners to join us in studio or by phone, but they declined, and that may be because they're caught in the middle. We'll talk about that, trying to please the smoking customers and the non-smoking customers. Let's start in thinking about talking to both of you. And in reading your story, Rachel, I'd like to just start with you and why you got involved in this. What drives you here?
Sure. I would say a couple of things really drive me. One would be outrage, and one would be just a little bit of my own personal story and my own experience with tobacco and secondhand smoke.
And what is that?
Well, I was a young smoker. I began smoking in my teenage years, actually coinciding with about the time that I came out as gay, and I was rejected by my parents. And one of the things that we did in my high school is we would go out in the back and into the woods, and we would smoke cigarettes. And this was our way of getting...
Coping.
Finding community. Finding a group
a
to be a part of.
Getting away from your parents.
Exactly.
And finding a new identity besides that of the child of these parents who were scorning you or scolding you.
Exactly. And we could all identify, and this was our forum, this was our place to talk about these issues, and this is sort of where we came together. We always knew on our breaks, this is where we go, this is what we do.
That's how you find the gay people.
Exactly. Sure.
Well, you know, if you think about it, Rachel, in gay and lesbian bars, as I mentioned a few minutes ago in the intro, is that, you know, this is what my experience was. You could start a conversation with anybody if you could, you know, can I get a match? Can I get a light? Can I bum a cigarette? I mean, this was how it was, at least back in my growing years, and certainly in yours even, as you said. It's a sense of bonding. It's a sense of a way of starting a conversation, you know, without a dog, because you can't take them to gay bars.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that makes perfect sense for the time you were feeling so excluded, and you found a way to feel included through tobacco.
That's exactly it. And I smoked for maybe about 10 years, and then I actually had to quit because I couldn't breathe. I actually could not breathe anymore, and I am an asthmatic. I was diagnosed with asthma just a few years after I started smoking.
You think it was related?
Absolutely. My parents were smokers. I was exposed to secondhand smoke.
You grew up with secondhand smoke long before you smoked.
Exactly.
I think that actually may have something to do with the formative lungs of a small child, the asthma developing in a secondhand smoke environment. I grew up in a secondhand smoke environment and was in an oxygen tent at age 6 in the hospital. I think because of that, some sort of pneumonia, but I relate to that.
Absolutely. There's a very strong link between secondhand smoke exposure, young children, and asthmatics.
So when your body's developing.
Exactly.
It's science.
So as an asthmatic, what I found after I quit because I couldn't breathe anymore was that the only reason I was ever really able to smoke is because the cigarette companies actually add bronchodilators to the cigarettes.
Not just in the cool cigarettes, not just in the menthols?
Not just in the menthols, in all cigarettes. I was never really a menthol smoker. I was actually more into the more natural so-called cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
But it does the same thing that my asthma inhaler does. So actually by having this cigarette, it opened up my lungs so that it could basically poison my lungs. And when
That's
I found...
kind of brilliant in a Machiavellian kind of way, but it is kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
When I found that out, I absolutely became outraged, and that's where I said the outrage comes from, and I wanted to do something about it. And the more that I've learned about secondhand smoke and about the tobacco companies, and particularly the ways that they've targeted LGBT community and also youth, you know, being a young smoker, mm-hmm. I wanted to give back. I wanted to do something to help in the community. I wanted to find some way to help the community and be more aware.
Just awareness.
Yeah.
I understand. And I want to hear more about your story because there's many layers to it.
Absolutely.
And so we'll get back to you in a second, but I wanted to remind people that you're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guests are Brian Davis of Freedom from Tobacco. It's a project for the LGBT Center here in San Francisco. And my guest is Rachel Nolan. She is also part of Freedom from Tobacco. And they're both here live today with me in the studio. If you want to find out more, you can go to freedomfromtobaccosf.org. Brian, what kind of science is there to show a relationship between homophobia and the LGBT community's high smoking rates?
Well, you know, it's interesting because for many, many, many years, we've been saying that, you know, just based on common sense, that, it, you know, we can see a correlation between why is the LGBT community smoking twice as much as the general population?
Well, somewhat based on what Rachel said.
Exactly.
There's a story there.
Right. And there were lots and lots of stories out there like Rachel's. And so it took a while, but the science is finally there. We finally have the research now, many research reports that have been coming up in recent years, where they're showing that they're actually researching it and seeing that, yes, it is because of homophobia. It is because of the extra stress that you face because of homophobia.
Because people face homophobia, because they're discriminated against or because they're spurned or scorned by their family. They're rejected. I mean,
exactly.
And we wouldn't have it getsbetterproject.com.
Right. And it's especially because most smokers, 90% of smokers, start before they're 18.
Right.
And that's when are we facing the greatest stress in the LGBT community? When we're in our teen years.
And we're still dependents.
Right. So it makes it that much harder.
And we don't have power.
Right.
And Rachel's story is having. So let's talk about it. Back to you, Rachel. Is it a way of having power, that cigarette, that sense of hanging out and going and sharing a cigarette? There's a sense of freedom or power. Freedom from tobacco, that's the organization you're from, but there's a certain freedom that the cigarette industry promotes. And there is a certain freedom you got as a young woman having a cigarette with a pal.
Sure. I mean, I would definitely identify as a rebellious young child. I didn't always listen to exactly what my parents said.
Way
I definitely was very defiant. You know, and why would I if they were not really
not
accepting
nice.
Me in the way that I really needed them to as a young child? So I would definitely identify it was a form of my rebellion. It was a way of me saying, haha, I'm going to do what I want, even if you say that this is bad. And I couldn't, you know, at that time, it was very much out there that cigarettes are bad for you. You know, they cause cancer, heart disease, lung disease, all
this. Is this in the early 90s? Tell me when this is.
Early 90s.
Early 90s, right.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of history of what cigarettes do by that point.
Absolutely. And it was already beginning to the point where I think communities were starting to ban cigarettes in restaurants. And I grew up outside of Boston, and I was still in high school, I believe, when they banned cigarettes in the restaurants and the bars in Boston. Mm-hmm. It was right around that time, sort of early mid-90s.
But it still was this tool for you, this habit, this practice, this experience for you to bond with other people, to sort of be defiant, obviously, and to just have a sense of power, which is what you were missing. I think that's what's interesting about smoking. I smoked. Mm-hmm. I have a similar story, obviously a different decade, but a similar story of rebellion around it, which is the first time I've sort of thought about that. And it just seems like that makes perfect sense. Oh, I'm doing this bad thing because I'm bad, but I'm with the other bad kids. Mm-hmm. And now finally I've found some other people like me who want to get away from the thing that I'm fleeing.
Right. Right.
Which is a very gay experience, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's really why we call the project Freedom from Tobacco, is because it is, you know, about just the things that you were talking about. And in addition to that, that, you know, you mentioned how the tobacco companies do try to make it seem like smoking is about freedom. And they do that because they know that they are appealing to that mindset that especially young people and especially LGBT people do have.
People of color. I mean, look how cool marketed itself to the African-American
who
community.
Who smoke more as well. And so, yeah.
We have that show right now.
Right. And so we're looking at the fact that the tobacco companies deliberately market to our community mm-hmm. because they know that we smoke more, because they know that we're vulnerable because of these psychological factors. And so we wanted to, you know, sort of turn that on its head and say, well, it's freedom from tobacco. No, it's not tobacco companies saying, hey, here's how to get free by smoking.
Audrey Silk is a smokers' rights activist in New York City, a place that didn't ban smoking in restaurants and bars until 2003. many years after California, because, of course, California leads the way. I found out about her in a blog post at thevillagevoice.com. She's an ex-cop. She runs CLASH, Citizens Lobbying Against Smoker Harassment. She believes it's a civil rights issue. Now, I know many people listening right now smoke or might be smoking right now, driving down the freeway in your car, having a cigarette, listening to this. Maybe you've already turned us up. Oh, well, we won't know that. Well, they might be thinking the same thing. But as Ms. Silk says, she says they've been beaten into submission, the smokers. And she, you know, said, don't tell me, don't ask me how long I've been smoking. This just stigmatizes it. And so she's incredibly rebellious and incredibly fierce. And she doubts the damages from secondhand smoke. So is it a civil rights issue, Brian, Rachel?
No, it's not a civil rights issue. I mean, really, what there's sort of, what's the comparison that we make it to is to the, when it used to be that people would drive drunk and it would be totally okay to drive drunk. You know, it's a very different time now because of Mothers Against Drunk Driving that came along and made it not cool to drive drunk and made people aware that
It was the beginning, wasn't it?
It was the beginning. Lots and lots of people were dying because of it, and it wasn't a joke, and it wasn't funny. And so we're trying to do sort of the same thing with secondhand smoking, getting people to understand that this is a serious health issue, that this is a public health issue. This is not an issue of whether someone has the rights or not. This is an issue of society recognizing that something is a problem and doing something about it. And, you know, the Surgeon General has said there's no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke. That's from the Surgeon General. We know that 53,000 people a year in this country are dying from secondhand smoke. So it is real. It is a problem. And it's not something to be taken lightly.
Well, you know, I'm listening to the other side of this in my head since we're not taking calls on a half-hour show here, which we sometimes do when we go to an hour. But I'm thinking, you know, wait a minute. Isn't this just a bit of political correctness? And you guys just really, why don't you people lighten up? You know, I'm just standing outside in a park. Why are you going to legislate that? Because that's now what's going on, is to try to legislate beaches and parks to not make it okay to smoke openly in the open air. Now, as a non-smoker, I don't mind that. It's in a closed environment that I mind it. But in an open environment, I don't mind it, and I don't understand that, and I don't understand why people want to only rent to non-smokers, and you can't smoke in your own apartment that you're paying for, and in San Francisco, you're paying quite a lot for.
Well, it's a lot of different issues, but basically what, you know, we're looking at in terms of an outside environment, we do have research from a study from Stanford recently where they show that if there is two people standing, and this is like in a patio area, an outside area. Mm-hmm. Two people within 18 inches of each other, one is smoking, one is not. The non-smoker is exposed to the same amount of smoke as he or she would be if they were inside with that person. So, you know, it is not insignificant when we're talking about outdoor smoking. Another aspect of outdoor smoking is litter, is the pollution and the massive amounts of cigarette butts and getting into the water and getting into our environment. So those are many of the environments. Certainly the park laws, to some extent, are about the litter issue and about babies and, you know, picking them up and that sort of thing.
I'm talking to Brian Davis and Rachel Nolan here from the Freedom from Tobacco Project of the LGBT Center in San Francisco. My name is Marilyn Pittman. You're listening to Out in the Bay. Yes, Rachel.
I just wanted to speak a little bit about to the more personal aspect about encountering secondhand smoke in the environment, even in an outside perspective. As an asthmatic, I've already once been hospitalized by exposure to secondhand smoke, which prevents me from going out into the bars and the clubs and the cash or where I really want to be.
But you're not supposed to smoke there, Rachel.
But outside, everybody's out on the curb and they're smoking. If I go into one of the bars that has these so-called smoking rooms that have met the exemptions of the San Francisco department or the city, and I walk into one of those places and somebody, you know, is walking out or at the door or that sort of thing, smoking.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there and say, actually, what's really bugging me in the Castro is this exact thing, and all over the city, in the Lower Haight and Haight, I don't know, wherever I go, it just seems like if I want to have a cocktail, I'm hanging with my friends, then all of a sudden there's have food. There's all of a sudden people standing out right outside the door. The rule says curb, but that's really about, like, what, 6 feet from the door? And they keep the doors open because it's San Francisco. That's what we do here. And all the smoke, depending on the winds, generally speaking, blows right into the restaurant, not down the street. So people aren't following the rules. Oh, they are, but the rules need to be made 10, 15 feet, not the curb. And so that's what's bothering me about the situation. And so what you're saying is you should be able to go into a bar in the Castro, have a cocktail, and not have smoke coming at you.
Exactly. I should be able to go out where my community is on a Friday or Saturday night, be able to dance, be able to enjoy myself. You know, and part of our project, one of the things that we did is we actually went into some of these bars and clubs, and particularly the outside patios of these locations, and we measured air quality to see if they were meeting the qualifications. And what we found is of the four places that we actually measured air quality, every single one of them peaked in the very hazardous. Now, Brian already mentioned that there's no safe level of secondhand smoke exposure, but every single one of these places was not only unsafe, but peaked in the worst possible exposure that you could have.
Well, I looked it up today, and there are many bars that in the Castro, and I know this from my experience as well, but they have patios in the back or a smoking room adjacent. In Toad Hall, for example, on 18th Street right near Castro, they have a patio in the back for smokers. But does the smoke go into the bar? Is it truly cut off? And that's the question in every one of these places that I feel, you know, that I've ever been to. It's like, where is the part where you say it's for smokers, but it's not really, it's for everybody?
Well, I mean, there's part of what we're looking at is we're looking at the law that exists in San Francisco regarding secondhand smoke. And when we're talking about the backyard patios, which we have focused on, there's a couple of different things that we should talk about. One is that there is a 10-foot distance. There's supposed to be a 10-foot distance from the entry, exit, or operable windows of the building, of the bar, to where people can start smoking. So there's supposed to be this 10-foot buffer zone. And there's also a definition of what a outdoor patio is supposed to be in the law, which is that there's not supposed to be a ceiling. And so if there is in many of these places, some kind of overhead cover, some
kind of
ceiling.
Protects from rain.
Or from the hot sun, or just because they like it that way. And so they have these spaces. And so it was in fact these spaces where we did do the air quality readings that Rachel mentioned earlier, where we found that the highest air quality problems was where we were seeing these overhead spaces over 50% or more of the space.
Well, and we, again, I'm going to mention that we invited some of the bar owners in the Castro to come on this radio show, to call in even, make it easier, and they declined. And I know that it's because they're caught between, you know, the smoking customer and the non-smoking customer. They're trying to follow the law and appease the smokers because, frankly, we all know, maybe not as much right now, but through history in the last half century, smoking has been about drinking. Drinking and smoking have been a pair. And there are a lot of people who don't want to go without one when they want the other. And so that is part of this push, or this maybe enabling, maybe, that the bar owners do. They're not able to enforce it. They're doing their best. That's mm-hmm. probably their position, they would say tonight to us.
Yeah.
They're doing their best. They can't legislate everything. They can't control everything. Mm-hmm. But the way it's set up is not always lawful. And then you have to say, well, where's the city? Where is the enforcement? Talk about
that. Well, I mean, you know, first, just to talk about what you're saying with what the bar owners are saying. I mean, we have had conversations with the bar owners, and not with all of them, but with many of them. And, you know, we have had some people who have said, yeah, you know, it's just the same things that you said. And they are concerned about business. They are concerned about not losing money. And what we've talked to them about is how every study that's been done, every rigorous, scientifically valuable, you know, valid study that's been done around the world has shown that businesses, bars and restaurants do not lose money when they go smoke-free. They also, you know, very often they make more money. And what we see also in these cases is that even when, you know, a lot of times they will say things like, well, you know, but if there's a bar over here that doesn't allow smoking and I allow smoking, you know,
this is
the
thing.
But the thing is,
this guy's kind of letting it slide over here. Come on over here. We'll have a ciggy.
Well, it's not about letting it slide. It's about, you know, whether there's some laws, some bars allowing it, other bars aren't. And, you know, there was many studies. One example is Sacramento in the 90s. You know, we had this patchwork of laws where some places had smoking and some places didn't. We had Sacramento County. We had Sacramento City. Sacramento Sacramento City. It was illegal to smoke in the bars. Sacramento County, it was legal. We did not see people going over the border into Sacramento County and smoking. You know, we did not see them making more money there. We did not see the Sacramento City bars losing money. Many different examples of this sort of thing. Same thing would happen here.
So there's Let me jump in. What you're talking about is that there's a fear that that will happen.
Yeah.
That's what you're really sort of saying here, the subtext here,
yes.
That there's a fear that if we did that, if I really went all the way, that I'm really going to lose money.
Right.
And what you're saying is there is actual, the Sacramento example, for example, you know, is that didn't happen.
Right.
And that
happen.
May not happen.
It won't happen. I mean, we know from every study that it won't happen. Hmm. And, you know, it's really up to, you know, it's really what we're looking for is for the bar owners to recognize that this is an important issue in our community. As we talked about, we're smoking twice as much as the general population. And
let's go back to that because we didn't talk about that much. But tell us a little bit more about that. Sure. I don't think that most people are aware, gay or straight, whatever, or I don't like the word straight, the un-gays. I don't think most people are... Well, who wants to be boring? I don't think that most people are aware of how many more gay people smoke. Gay people in California, gay men smoke 50% more than un-gay men.
Right. And bisexual men, yes.
And lesbian women smoke...
Three times more
than heterosexual women or non-gay or whatever women. That's an astounding thing that I don't think most people understand about this. And why you're on the air and why you're with me is it's a problem. We have a smoking, you know, epidemic in our culture, in our gay culture, and have for a long, long time from its beginning, really. And we haven't liberated ourselves or haven't been able to figure it out. And it doesn't seem like there's much attention to this. Do you ever feel like that?
I feel like we're making a beginning. I feel like there's definitely a scratch that's been started on this issue. There's a lot of groups nationwide. There's a lot of groups in other countries that are working on the
same
thing.
You have a national network here, too, of health for LGBT people groups.
There was a national group.
You were telling me about that off the air.
Yeah, there's a national group. It's called the National LGBT Health Equity Network, I believe is the name. They bring people together across the country on the issues of tobacco, on other health issues as well that are important.
Is California leading the way on this?
We're doing a lot of good things. A lot of good things are happening in other places. I did want to mention also that, you know, we talked about the male and female statistics. We should also mention that the youth statistic, the young adult statistic, 18 to 24, is, almost 50%. You know,
explain that a little bit? 50% more LGBT do smoke 50% more than un-LGBT.
45% versus 18%. I mean, of others their age. So, you know, we're looking at a very high rate of smoking in the youth range as well. And so we see young people coming to our community. Part of the reason why that happens is because, you know, because of homophobia, we have limited spaces where we meet in a community, and bars are the places where we get together, where we build community.
Or AA meetings.
And our young people come into these, come into our community, and they see that these spaces very often are smoking
Someone
spaces.
Out there is happy I said that.
Yeah, right. So this is...
Interesting. The thing that also I understand about this, Brian, you're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm talking with Brian Davis and Rachel Nolan from Freedom from Tobacco, a project of the San Francisco LGBT Community Center here in San Francisco, obviously. And you can find out more from Freedom from Tobacco SF, freedomfromtobaccosf.org. And you can find out more about the organization. But I want to quickly put this in here, and that the tobacco companies, unlike the liquor companies, don't buy our events. They don't sponsor our events. They're extremely low visibility, and they don't contribute a lot of money. The liquor companies and the beer companies have forever put a lot of money into the gay community. Why not tobacco?
Well, just because the tobacco companies don't do it now doesn't mean they never have and they never will. They have in the past. One prominent example was GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian, you know, Alliance Against Defamation. You know, they used to get significant money from tobacco companies. They used to have a smoking lounge at their fundraising events for Lucky Strike. I mean, it was really a very serious thing. And eventually they stopped doing that. There was a movement in our community in the LGBT tobacco control community to stop that. And we have worked successfully. We've worked a previous project we worked on, you know, got a lot of organizations to adopt tobacco-free funding policies, to not take tobacco funding, because we know as our society, as the LGBT community becomes more and more acceptable in society, tobacco companies will be looking more and more towards, you know, saying, well, it's okay for us to start sponsoring LGBT events again. And so we really wanted to, you know, inoculate against
that. The rednecks won't be so mad at us.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to throw in here, though, before we forget, is that when we're talking about secondhand smoke impacts, it's not just about our community. It's not. And a lot of times people will say, people like that woman you mentioned might say, well, people don't have to be on the patios. They don't have to be there. They can go somewhere else. Well, but not everyone has that choice, not the workers. But the workers who are at these bars, they have to breathe this smoke. And they should not have to be in a situation where they're forced to choose between their job and their health.
Rachel, let's go back to you for a minute and just tell me a little bit about how tobacco has impacted your family. It isn't just you.
No, absolutely not just me. There's a lot of health impacts with secondhand smoke and tobacco on my family. My grandmother, who never smoked a day in her life, got emphysema from secondhand smoke from my grandfather, who smoked. Not a chain smoker, just smoked regularly. My grandfather got diagnosed with emphysema 30 years after he quit. So he smoked until he was about 50, quit, got diagnosed at 80 with emphysema. So, you know, there are long-term effects even after you quit, if you spend your whole lifetime smoking, that people maybe don't think about in that moment. Not only that, but there's other smokers in my family that have had emphysema and this sort of thing. So it's very prevalent, asthma and emphysema in my family, from a family of smokers.
And you've also been hospitalized for secondhand smoke.
I've been hospitalized from secondhand smoke. I will get triggered by my asthma if I pass smoke. Earlier today, just going into my gym, there was somebody outside smoking a cigarette in front of the gym.
It affects you.
Absolutely. It affects me. I have to use
my inhaler. I know
there's
some people listening right now that are asthmatic that are identifying with you and just nodding their heads and being as outraged.
And there are people that can't get out into the community because of that, because they are the lots of people we talk to.
Their fear that it will, because it's truly medically a problem with asthma.
Because it has. I mean, I've already been to the hospital once. Why am I going to go put myself in a situation where I'm going to end up right back there? I mean, I won't do it.
So you're passionate about this?
Absolutely.
You're devoted to this?
I am absolutely committed to this.
Because it's affected your whole life?
It's affected my whole life. It's affected my family. It's affected my community. I mean, this is a serious issue. And I personally want to do something about it. I want to get other people excited to do things about it. I want to be part of a community that's doing something about it. And I really think that as a community, we can make a real change. You know, we are the people in this community.
Thank you so much. It's great to hear from you and hear your story. And Brian, you're always welcome on this show.
Thank you.
Very good. Brian Davis.
Thank you for having us.
And Rachel Nolan from Freedom From Tobacco, freedomfromtobaccosf.org. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay. It's a weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. Our show streams and is on the air every Thursday at 7 p.m. Then we archive our shows for podcasting and on-demand listening at outinthebay.com. And now we're on your phone. Just go to outinthebay.com and download the Stitcher app. Hey, some good news. Out in the Bay has won. Yes, it's true. We're being recognized by the Northern California chapter of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, NLGJA. Eric Jansen and I, the producers and hosts of this radio show, are the recipients of their annual Excellence in Journalism Award. Yay! The awards will be presented next Wednesday, November 14th, 6 to 8 p.m. at Cafe du Nord on Market Street in San Francisco. Come on down, but just don't smoke at the top of the stairs. Just go to outinthebay.com for more information. Out in the Bay is supported in part by Perfect Outings and Active Epicurean Adventures, offering highly curated small group private tours for discerning travelers. Learn more at perfectoutings.com. Hey, we've been on the air for 8 years now. Just go to our Donate Now button on our website to keep us on the air, outinthebay.com. Thanks to WY Enterprises for our website. They help you manage your life and your office, wyenterprises.com. Eric Jansen's email is eric@outinthebay.com. Mine is marilyn@outinthebay.com. Write us. Thanks to the staff and management of KLW and to Joanne Marr. She's our engineer tonight in the studio. Out in the Bay is produced by Eric Jansen and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me. Thank you.